Yom HaShoah, as I spoke about earlier this week, the State of Israel identifies very strongly with the Holocaust and felt that there was a need to have a day to mark all the terrible tragedies of the Holocaust. Next week, we're going to have two new holidays that most of you, unless you're Shalabet, never experienced in the same way. Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. Yom HaZikaron is Memorial Day, but it's not like Memorial Day in America. Right? Memorial Day in America is just like a day off and sales and stuff like that. Here, it's hard to find an Israeli that doesn't know someone that died in battle. And if you don't know personally, well then your neighbor or cousin does know. I remember when we first moved to Neve Daniel, and they had this very moving ceremony. Right, it's very interesting here in Israel. I remember my Shana Aleph here. You move from Yom HaZikaron, this very somber day, this day where you know, you're thinking about people who made the ultimate sacrifice, and then it turns crazy like into like Purim. And I remember like the mixed feelings. This is what happens. And it makes it more meaningful. I remember I was here in Israel, it was before cell phones, and I never wrote my parents any letters, except for that one day. After Yom HaZikaron, there was something there special. We're going to go Sunday to Har Herzl. You're looking at the graves, and you see, you do the math, and you go, these people are my age. Right? The people here are my age. And if you would have grown up here, you would be in the army. And you start thinking. So you have Yom HaZikaron, you have Yom HaAtzmaut, and then a couple weeks later, we'll have Yom Yerushalayim. The difference between Chutz La'aretz and here is that in Chutz La'aretz, you only see Judaism as a religion. And here, we understand that it's both a religion and we're a nation. We're not just a religion. We're Am Yisrael. Right? We're the people of Israel. And there's something more than just being part of a religion, we're part of a people. We just read about Nadab and Abihu. Nadab and Abihu die, two brothers, they die in Parshat Shemini. And when I was reading this, when I was learning Shnai Mikra Becha Targum and then Parshat Shavua, it brought back memories of what transpired here over the last month or maybe 5 weeks. In the parasha, you have two siblings that pass away. And about a month ago, you had two brothers that were killed. Two brothers on their way to a wedding were killed. And then a week or two later, you had a brother and a sister who got caught in a flash flood. And they were killed. And then most recently, some of you probably even know the family, the D family, two sisters killed. Siblings. 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 And then afterwards, a couple of days later, the girl's mother passed away. I was eating Friday night with a few couples, and one woman, a mother, only a mother would say this, she said, I am sure that when Lucy D was there, you know, in critical condition for a few days, she made the decision, my husband can stay here with the other kids, I need to go there and be with my daughters. And I'm thinking about it. Here's this family. It happened to me all the time. Baruch Hashem, your family's too big to be in one car. So then, like, you know, what would happen? Okay, we're going. Who's coming with me? Who's going with mommy? Okay, that's it. Kids jumping in cars. And that's what happened. They were going on a family vacation. And two sisters said, okay, we're going with mommy. Siblings. And then I'm looking around at our country. And there's so much sibling rivalry. You have brothers hating brothers, not accepting anyone else's view other than yours. I'm not saying I know. I have no idea why anything happens. But to me, it was like a musser. Maybe the death of all these siblings is because we haven't figured out how to get along. We, all Jews, we share a common fate. We share a common destiny. Right? The fate, let's go back to what we just had 2 days ago. The Holocaust. Hitler didn't discriminate. He took religious Jews and irreligious Jews, Hasidic Jews and Misnagdim. You can be a socialist, you can be a capitalist, you can be Ashkenaz, you can be Sephardim living in Greece. He didn't care. We share a common fate. And we share a common destiny. Because whether you're willing to admit it or not, the future for Am Yisrael is here in Israel. We need to get along. We need to get along. In the beginning of the year, you all know, we have a Shir Shabbaton. So, every year that I do this, guys who have been in my Shir know this, I ask questions. I have this book, Book of Questions. Not a religious book, some secular book from the New York Times. And I ask these thought-provoking questions to hear what guys have to say. And I ask it to one particular person, then afterwards, anyone else would have a different idea. One of the questions that I ask, it's in the book, is, how would you like to die? Okay? So usually the answers that I get, I've been doing this for years, you know, old age, in my sleep, things like that. This year I got two new answers. One guy said, I want to stand at the foot of a cliff and fall backwards into oblivion. Okay, never heard that one before. And another guy told me, said, does it matter how old I am? I said, no. He goes, well, obviously I want to OD. Because I never heard that one before. It was disturbing. It was disturbing. But once, many years ago, I was doing this, and my son Ron, who's now, you know, at 29, but then he's probably about 12, 13, 14, I don't know. He came in, it's like Friday night, and to make Danielle, all the little kids are out all over the community, and like, you know, I don't lock my door, they just like come in after I usually go to sleep, and now I was up later because I had students over, and he walks in, I'm in the middle of doing this with my students, and I ask, I said, Ron, curious, how would you like to die? He looks and he goes, obviously saving another Jew. And then it hit me, that's the difference between growing up here and growing up there. When you grow up in Chutz Lars, you think about what's best for me. And you grow up here, so you think about what's best for Klal Yisrael. This period, between the memorial days, are days of reflection, reflection upon death. Parsha Shmini, Aaron's two sons are killed. And we're taught that he accepts it. Now, obviously Aaron had what to say. Obviously, Aaron had questions. There are things that he could have said, I don't get it. Right now, in the middle of all this simcha, couldn't wait for a Tuesday in Cheshvan when nothing's going on. Like, now is when you have to do it? Aaron doesn't say anything. Aaron accepts. I've been here with Rabina for about 25 years. I hear him say the same idea. Rebetzin Frankel said the same idea also when, unfortunately, her son was killed by terrorists. But for 25 years, I've heard Rabina saying all the time, God does not work for me. God does not owe me any answers. And that was the former Aaron saying. That was Aaron HaKohen. He says, God doesn't owe me any answers. But the people we're dealing with, Yom HaShoah and Yom HaZikaron, is a very special people. There was a question that was asked during the Holocaust. We have Sfarmi Ma'amakim, Rav Oshri, who survived the Holocaust. He was asked questions during the Holocaust. And he, Baruch Hashem, he survived, and he published. We have a lot of response. One of the questions is an interesting question. Should I say Kaddish for my relative who was killed by the Nazis? And he would say, obviously, why not? He said, because what's the purpose of Kaddish? When my relative passes away, so I'm not sure if he's going to go to Olam Haba, so I say Kaddish. I say Kaddish to help him. The child says Kaddish to help him get into Olam Haba. He goes, but obviously anyone killed by the Nazis, killed because a Jew, is going straight to Olam Haba. So is there a need? And if someone who's killed in the Holocaust because he's a Jew, then Kal v'chomer, a soldier who's killed in the Israeli army because he's a Jew and defending other Jews, we're dealing with very special people. Now, whether or not you say Kaddish, I want to get into the halacha, the maybe Kaddish not just for the deceased, maybe Kaddish also for the mourner himself, maybe he feels like he's doing something. Obviously, you should know Kaddish has nothing to do with death. We don't mention death at all in Kaddish. But the question's interesting. We remember the horrors of the Holocaust. Okay, if we said, you know, we say there's a in the Gemara, it's in the Haggadah, the whole door b'dor chayv adam rotet smoki ilu hu yatsami Mitzrayim, I would say, paraphrasing that, the whole door b'dor chayv adam rotet smoki ilu hu yatsami Auschwitz. And I'll go one step further. If the Jews in the Midbar started to have nostalgic memories about the good old days in Egypt, I don't think anyone had nostalgic memories about the good old days in Auschwitz. But we remember. We remember then, we remember now. V'hisha amda. V'hisha amda la voseinu. Kadosh Baruch Hu was with us. We were not annihilated, not in Egypt, not in Europe, and we won't be. Why? Because Kadosh Baruch Hu is with us. It's a very important message. Now, when I first learned about the Holocaust, my initial reaction was, oi. Oi. But I remember after going on the Poland trip, some of you are Zoka to go on now, I learned about such amazing people who survived, who pushed themselves not to give up. Right? I often would say to myself, forget about religion. How long would I just last? Right? You sit there, you hear guys complaining about the food here. Imagine. Right? The beds or the heating or stuff like that. I remember we were in Poland once and it was freezing. And then it started to rain. And a guy standing next to me said, he goes, you know that I would complain, but I know that my grandfather was here without even a coat. So there's no way I can complain. That's a good point. Would we survive physically? And then, when you hear how people survived with their humanity intact, it's just remarkable. We were talking about a little bit at lunch, where Vrubel said that his father-in-law, who's, you know, survived Auschwitz, got the tattoo. Anyone ever meet a person with a tattoo with the numbers? Okay. So just you should know, 80% of the people that entered Auschwitz were sent immediately to the left, to their death. Within 45 minutes, 80% of the people that came into Auschwitz were killed in 45 minutes. And of the 20% that were sent to the right, the life expectancy was 3 months. So when you're meeting someone who either was right there at the end, or got transferred out, or was superhuman. And Rubel said that his father was walking in Mea Sharam, and some yeshiva guys saw him. I guess it was the summer, he had a short sleeve shirt on, and just went over, took his hand, and kissed him. And Rav Rubel's father-in-law said, what was that? He goes, my Rebbe told me, if you ever see someone with a number tattoo, kiss him, it means he's a malach. So, just the people that survived, it's remarkable. And then there were people that went out of their way to try to mekayim mitzvah. I sit there and think about all the excuses that I hear in yeshiva about why I couldn't get up for chakras or why I couldn't make it to afternoon seder or put on tefillin over vacation or whatever it is. Wow, people in the worst of times. They went to their deaths with Shema on their lips or saying vidui, or one story that I read right before a person was about to be killed. There was a bunch of Jews around them, and the Nazi officer was there, and he says, I have one request. He goes, can I make a bracha? He said, sure. He said, Baruch Atah Hashem, Kenu Melech Olam, Shalo Asani Goy. He goes, I'm ready. And you ask the Jews, if you could choose, right now be the murderer, and you want to be a Nazi now, or be a victim? No, it's say, I want to be a Nazi. No, I want to kill the Nazis, but I don't want to be a Nazi. The story that I think I told in the beginning of the year, but it's worth repeating if I already said it. We learn at the end of Gemara Brachos how Rabbi Akiva died. Rekiva. They're torturing him. They're combing the flesh off of his body with these iron combs. And he says, Shema. And his students say, Revi, even now? And he said, my whole life, I always say, Kriyat Shema, b'chol l'bavcha, b'chol nashecha, b'chol modecha. And I never knew when I'd have the opportunity, b'chol nashecha, I'm ready to get my nefesh. And that's the way I was always taught this, usually at a kumzitz or a oneg Shabbos, sometimes with music in the background. Okay, but that's not what it says in the Gemara. In the Gemara it says, Hevi Zman Kriyat Shema. What does that mean? Rabbi Kiva looked at his watch and he said, oh my gosh, it's almost 9:04. I gotta say Shema. And I remember when I saw that Gemara, I was so disheartened. Because I always understood the Gemara as this proclamation of faith. And now I'm reading, say, it's almost not Krishna. And then I saw this book that told a story about a guy in the Holocaust, and I understood everything. There was a rule in the ghetto, in this particular ghetto, that if you walk by an SS officer, you had to remove your cap. Show a show of respect. And there was this Jew, he was walking, walked right by a Nazi officer, he didn't take off his hat. And the officer yelled at him, knocked the hat off his head, and kicked him to the ground. And the Jew picked himself up, put his hat back on his head, and walked past him again. And the Nazi threw him down again, cursed him some more. And he was getting up and putting on his hat again. Friend said, what are you doing? He said, I'm going to cover my head. And he can go to hell. And then I understood the Rabbi Akiva story. They, the Romans, are trying to stop me from saying Shema. But I have a mitzvah to do. I'm going to do it. There were Jews in the worst of times that said, I have a mitzvah to do. I'm going to do it. Living Al Kiddush Hashem is sometimes harder than dying Al Kiddush Hashem. You know, we're always taught people died Al Kiddush Hashem. You read all these stories in the Gemara and history books because when the Goyim say you can't keep this mitzvah, so we have to give up our life. So you should know an interesting psak came in the Holocaust. A number of Rabbanim are quoted as saying this. When the Goyim want to uproot Judaism, so you have to give up your life for the sake of Judaism. When the Goyim are trying to uproot Jews, the mitzvah of the hour is to live. That's why Jews went and they fought against the Nazis in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, and people survived. And you look around now also, a lot of times you see these Holocaust survivors, they just like live forever. You know, they were sick, they had this, because they said, oh, not, if Hitler couldn't kill me, I'm not letting cancer kill me, you know. And they just like, they're stubborn. And the mitzvah is to survive. Anytime I speak to a survivor and I hear his story, they all feel it's miraculous. And I'm sure it is, because it doesn't make sense that anyone could survive. Anyone here a descendant of a Holocaust survivor? Okay. So now I'm going to tell you an interesting story. You probably know it. The message you might not have thought of. In Shmuel Bet, for those who don't know, that's a sefer in Tanakh. It's really important. In Shmuel, David HaMelech has to run away from his own son. Avshalom is rebelling, and David goes on the run. He has loyalists that go with him. As he's going, a guy named Shimi ben Gera curses him out. David has a loyal officer who says, just give me the word, I will kill him right now. It'll take a second. And David says, no. Later on, when David comes back to the throne, Shimon Gera goes running over, apologizing. And David forgives him and says, doesn't kill him. But, on his deathbed, he tells Shlomo, it's time to get even with Shimon Gera. Okay? When you figure out how, and he gives him some sort of condition, and Shimon Gera eventually does get killed by Shlomo. And here's this very interesting thing. We just finished Purim. We're now learning Masechet Megillah. And we know, how is Mordechai introduced? Mordechai ben? Ben Yair ben? Shimi. So Gemara says, Mordechai is the descendant of Shimi ben Gera. We know that Mordechai is from Binyamin. This is where Shimi ben Gera is from. This is what Gemara says. There's a Midrash that says, in the interim period, we don't know how long it was, from when David let Shimi live until he actually tells Shlomo to now kill him, he fathered the child that would go on to be the great-great-grandfather of Mordechai Yehudi. So what does that mean? Shimi Gera really deserved to die. But why didn't God allow David, put it in his mind, to let him live? Because someone really, really important was going to come from Shimi ben Gera. Now, all of you guys who raised your hands, your great parents, your great grandparents, they survived miraculously from the Holocaust. You know why? I don't know why, but maybe because you're supposed to be something great. Maybe that's the reason why their lives were spared. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu knew a few generations down the line, two or three generations down the line, you're going to be born. And you can amount to greatness like Mordechai HaYehudi. It's a huge responsibility, but we all have it. Anyone ever hear of Yeshiva Netzach Yisrael in Rechavia? Or anyone over here, okay, because you're in Rechavia, good. I saw W. Weiss learning from a Sefer, Kunchasei Shiurim. Anyone ever see the Sefer, Kunchasei Shiurim? Okay. Rabbi Yisrael Zev Guzman was a Rosh Yeshiva Netzach Yisrael. He was a Rav. He was on the Beis Din in Vilna with Rav Chaim Ozer Grzynski. He was a young person. And he survived the Holocaust. He said sometime later, I can never have kavod, and I can never be shamed. Why? Because when I was a young person, I came in once to like the Beis Din, and when Rav Chaim Ozer stood up for me, all these other great rabbanim stood up for me, no one gave me more kavod than I got when I was like 20 years old. As for shame, said, the Nazis ripped my child out of my hands and killed me in front of my eyes. There's nothing anyone can do to make me feel worse than that. Rav Chaim Ozer Grzynski, I'm sorry, Rav Yisrael Zev Gustman had a little garden in Yeshiva Netzach Yisrael in Rechavia that he took care of. A little strange. And you see him going out, and he's watering this stuff, he's planting things. And someone finally said to him, what are you doing? And he said, there's mitzvah ben adam l'makom, and mitzvah ben l'chavero, and there's mitzvah ben adam l'atzma. I have to do this. He said, once when I was a young person, I was a young man, I don't know why, but Rav Chaim Ozer Grzynski took me for a walk through the forest. And as we were talking, he pointed out to me, those things over there that's poisonous, these are edible. These are poisonous. These are edible. Stop. We're walking and talking, and he points out all the stuff. And I survived the Holocaust because of a certain amount of time that I was running through the forest, and I remembered what he told me was edible and what to stay away from. And therefore, I plant those edible things that kept me alive. Not because God commanded, not because anyone needs it. I need to do it for myself. Rav Gustman used to have a huge smile. He'd go with his wife and he'd go to the parades in Israel on Yom HaAtzmaut and watch the boys and girls dancing in the streets. And someone said to him, Pasnish, you know, watching kids with Bittul Torah. He said, for me to see boys and girls dancing, this is a huge thing. I saw so many boys and girls dying. It was a huge thing. But maybe the most famous story, the story that happened between him and Professor Yisrael Alman. Some of you might remember the name. He just recently, a few years ago, won a Nobel Prize. Professor Alman, he would go once a week to Netzach Yisrael and learn Thursday afternoon. Rav Gustman gave a shiur, not just to Yeshiva, open to anyone who came in from the neighborhood. Rav Aumann still is alive. He lives in the Shaarei Chesed area. I've run into him in the shuls over there. And he would go to Netzach Yisrael and he would learn. It was 1982, and Professor Aumann's son Shlomo was drafted into the war in Lebanon. And soon, sometime in the middle of the war, Shlomo Aumann was killed. Rav Gusman got the whole yeshiva to come to the Levaya, and they all went to the Levaya, and they stood there. And then after the Levaya, Professor Aumann went home. And usually the minhag is, you don't go to visit a family in the first 3 days, certainly if it's a tragic thing like this. Only families there, not like outsiders. But Professor Aumann gets home, and Rav Gusman comes in and sits down next to him. Professor Aumann says, Rebbe, it's amazing that you came to the Levaya. We don't really expect you to come to the Shiva. Now you need to get back to the Yeshiva. And he said, I never got a chance to sit Shiva for my son. Can I sit here with you a little bit? And then he told him, my mayor was taken from me. And I know that he is up in the holy minion in Shamayim. And he's dominating there. But today he's welcoming your son Shlomo. And he's saying to him, I was never Zocha to save, to defend another Jew. But you were. So you're going to be our Shliach Tzibor and our holy minion. Professor Aumann said to Rabbi Gusman, I never thought I would be comforted. Thank you very much. When we stand between these 2 days, between Yom HaShoah and Yom HaZikaron, we have to realize how different it is that we now have a state. Not just that if the state had been formed 3 years before the Holocaust instead of 3 years after, how many lives would have been lost? But just think about it. Next week they'll come out with the exact number. They say since 1860, because they start counting from when the first settlement, the Jews started coming back and building up the land of Israel. Since 1860 to now, the number of soldiers and victims of terror will come to somewhere around 25,000. One efficient week in Auschwitz killed more than 25,000 Jews. Just 1 week. Gemara Megillah, second parak, says that the war is the Atchalta de Geula. Rav Shechter said the reason why we say Halal on Yom HaAtzmaut, on Hey Iyar, on Yom HaAtzmaut, because that's when the war broke out. When the Gurion declared we're going to have a state, the Arabs attacked, and that's the Atchalta de Geula. Rav Shechter explains that to what Purim was. Purim was in Atchalta de Geula, leading to the eventual building of the Beit HaMikdash, and so too the war. And we celebrate Purim as a holiday, as an Atchalta de Geula, and so too the war that broke out on Yom HaAtzmaut is the Atchalta de Geula. Yom HaZikaron is not just for the soldiers who died. It's for every soldier who puts on a uniform. It's for every soldier who puts his life in danger. Right? All three of my sons were in combat. All three of them were shot at. And Baruch Hashem, no one was ever hurt. But every soldier, he puts his life in danger. And it doesn't matter how well you train. Okay? My oldest son, the one that was here for Shabbos, some of you here for Shabbos, one that dances when he dominates. So he was a commander of a unit. They went into Gaza. The end of 2008, December 2008 to January 2009, was an operation in Gaza called Oferet Yitzhuka. I think it's called Cast Lead in English. So both of my older sons went into Gaza, but my younger son, Yonatan, was a regular soldier. But my older son, Eli, he was an officer. And when I spoke to him after they came out, when it was over, his comment to me was, I went in with 19 soldiers, I came back with 19 soldiers. Responsibility. So here it is. These are commando soldiers. They're well trained. And yet, when they were pinned down and they were under heavy fire, one of his soldiers, well trained, like lost it, you know, started freaking out. Said, "Eli, you're wimbling, Eli, they're shooting at us." And he said, "I know, take a position over here, we're over here." He goes, "Eli, you're wimbling." You know, he says, "I know, take." And then he said, "Eli," and then my son just shook him and said, "You're right, run away." And he goes, "Okay, I got it. Everyone who puts on a uniform puts his life in danger. And then I thought about also this whole thing I said to you about the D family. I'll go in this car, I'll go in this car. Same son before he was a commander. Okay, their job was to hunt down terrorists. Okay, small unit of 8 guys. His commander was taking 3 guys, and he tells my son, "Eli, you take these other 3 guys, and we're going to go on this alleyway, and you go on this alleyway." And then at the last second, his commander said, "You know what? I'm going to go on this alley, you take the other group." And where his commander went, where my son was supposed to go, there was a roadside charge. They blew up this bomb and blew up all his 4 soldiers. Okay, his commander got it first, blew his legs off, and each person afterwards got a certain amount of shrapnel into their bodies. Okay? Well, my son hears it, so they come with their to try to rescue them while they're taking fire. And then he says to me, when I'm speaking to him after this, and you should know, my son is like the most calm person. It's the only time I ever saw him shaken up, rightfully so. He said, "Abi, you want to know what it is to be a commander in Tzfat El Israel? Here's my commander, Itai, with no legs, okay? Part of his hand blown off. He's resting on his shoulder, and he's giving me cover, and he's yelling, 'Evacuate the other guys first.'" Okay? And they're grabbing soldiers and then bringing them to safe place and getting his commander. And, you know, he called me and I got in touch with someone who was in the summertime, Rav Shai, who was in the yeshiva at the time, spoke to Rav Nevin, Salisha Davin, got him his name, goes to the hospital. The parents were told they were flying in a helicopter to the hospital. It's like a 95% chance that he doesn't make it through the night. Baruch Hashem, he's alive. He actually went back to the army, obviously not as combat, with 2, you know, prosthetic legs, and every soldier risks his life. I think of that on Yom HaZikaron, not just the people who unfortunately died. We know there's a Gemara that says Abayi and Rabba were both descendants of Eli HaKohen. And Eli HaKohen is a curse. Everyone from his family is going to die young. And the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, preached with Rosh Hashanah, says Rabba lived to the age of 40 and Abayi to the age of 60. Why did Abayi live 50% longer? Because while Rabba was involved in Talmud Torah, Abayi was involved in Talmud Torah and Chesed. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, who headed the Yeshiva Hezder of Gush, said there's no greater Chesed that a Jew can do than serve in the Israeli army today. And therefore, again, something that I keep in mind on Yom HaZikaron. I'm going to end with one last story. Chaim Shapiro. Chaim Shapiro survived the Holocaust. Aside from the hell that he went through, he lost his wife and 7 out of 8 children. The war's end, he makes his way with 1 son, Baruch, to a DP camp, and eventually they make their way to Israel. They make their way to Israel, and the War of Independence is breaking out. And Baruch volunteers. He's volunteers, he's trained. How's his training? They give him a gun, he takes 3 shots, and they said, "Okay, you're ready." And he's sent into battle. He's with, he'd go on to be very famous, but then Yitzhak Rabin's brigade. And he performed admirably to the point that he actually won a medal for courage. But the war wasn't won in 6 days, it was prolonged. And at one point, Chaim Shapiro's in his house, and he sees a delegation from the army walking his way. This is a delegation that no parent wants to see. It's a delegation that was Rabina's job to go and tell the family that they lost a loved one. And when they come, they knock on the door, they give him the sheet of paper, and he just takes it and he folds everything up. Just folds it over and over and over, doesn't say a word. He goes to the funeral. Word got out that this was the last member of Chaim Shapiro's family. Hundreds of soldiers came. The chief of staff, General Yigal Yadin, came to the funeral. They're giving haspedim, they're talking about how courageous he was. And then Chaim Shapiro, he starts to like shuffle a little bit back and forth. He starts to sing a little bit. People thought that obviously he's like losing it. They went over, put their arm around him. And he continued to sing. And then he said, "You must think that I've gone mad, but I want to explain to you that I have not. All my other children were killed, and I had no idea why. But this son, he died defending Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. This is not a reason to mourn. This is a day to celebrate." How amazing are the Jewish people? Am Yisrael Chai.
Sit down. Mark will be in 5 minutes. I'll say a few words.